Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shops, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Fraser Nelson. Over the weekend, Labour shadow cabinet members, along with heads of the unions, have been meeting to draw up Labour's manifesto. We won't find out the full details until Thursday. But for now, the Tories have made it into the news agenda with their own policy announcement. Boris Johnson is going to delay corporation tax cuts in a bid to save £6 billion that can go to the NHS. James, talk to us about the thinking behind this.
So the theory goes that once you get below 20% for a large economy, for an economy of the UK size, there's not that much more benefit from cutting corporation tax. And indeed, there are kind of other things like infrastructure spending that, would actually kind of help you get businesses to locate here. I also think it's a recognition of the fact that from the point of view of big business and the Corbyn agenda, the Tories don't need to be offering more corporation tax cuts to make themselves look like the more appealing face. And this policy frees up money for the Tories to offer tax breaks for small businesses, high street businesses that we all know are struggling because of online shopping and all this stuff. Now, I personally think that trying to save a high street is a little bit like to continue the great calumny on King Canute, because King Canute was actually trying to show that he was powerless to stop the waves. It is a little bit, in the generally misunderstood way that the King Canute story is used, it is a little bit King Canute-like to suggest that the high street can be saved, I think, personally. But anyway, but what you see is the Tories trying to close down a vulnerability of you're just giving big business what they want and you're not doing anything to save or help small businesses. And I think it's also a recognition that because the Tories want to spend more money on lots and lots of stuff, and they also want to offer tax cuts to the low paid, something's got to give somewhere if they're going to maintain any kind of claim to fiscal prudence.
Fraser, we hear a lot these days about the Labour Leave voters the Tories are trying to target. Indeed, they're in this week's Spectator cover piece. Do you think this corporation tax being put on ice in terms of the cut, along with the business rates package, is part of this idea of the Tories almost not entirely repositioning, but moving themselves closer to Labour turf when they're trying to get voters who don't normally turn blue to consider them?
Yes, I do think it's a bit odd. Also, it seems to directly contradict what he was saying only at the weekend. I mean, he was talking to the Sunday Telegraph about the need for tax cuts, and he was sort of mocked for repeating, and he's, by the way, the 20th person to make this point, that there's this 14th century Tunisian economist, Ibn Khaldun, who basically pointed out that if you lower the tax rate, you can get more tax revenue. This is the point that John F. Kennedy made in the 60s. This is a fairly basic point of conservative philosophy. Now, if you wanted to point to taxes where that happens, you might struggle generally, but corporation tax, I have to say, if you were a Tory, which I assume Boris Johnson is for the purposes of his argument, then you might say, look at corporation tax. It used to be 30%, now it's 20%. And what's happened during that time? The corporation tax receipts have gone from something like £38 billion when they were 30%, and now they're £57 billion now that they're 20%. Now, this is an example of corporation tax cuts not actually costing the government that much, because if you cut taxes for employers, then they've got more money to hire workers, to pay workers more. And the strange thing is, take in Sweden, for example, the trade unions there never really push for higher corporation taxes, because they know that when corporation taxes are low, the benefit is shared pretty quickly with consumers and with employees. So in saying that he's going to save money by not continuing corporation tax cuts, that he's going to give it to the NHS, Boris Johnson is conceding a fairly major part of the conservative economic argument. And after he's conceded this, I'm really not quite sure what will be left.
Yes, James, it's interesting because in Boris Johnson's speech at Conservative Party conference, he put in a very passionate defence of capitalism and the good it can do, tying it with funding the NHS, saying ultimately, and it seemed to be, he was setting that the clear blue water between the Tories and Labour is ultimately they believe that actually increasing the economy through measures that Jeremy Corbyn would hate, that's actually how you fund public services. But it does seem slightly with this announcement today that, as Fraser says, they could be conceding the argument more. So say if there was a television leaders debate tomorrow night on ITV, if Jeremy Corbyn was to go at Boris Johnson on this, it would be hard for him to come back and say, you're wrong about corporation tax, because Jeremy Corbyn could seemingly just reply and say, well, if I'm so wrong about corporation tax, why have you just delayed a cut?
Yeah, no, look, there is a vulnerability here for that 8 p.m. debate, which is obvious, as you know, as you and Fraser were saying, you are essentially saying there is actually a very decent argument that you've cut corporation tax, it's generated more revenue, and therefore more can be spent on public services.
More than that, jobs, better pay, a whole bunch of things come from this, and now the Tories are abandoning this ground.
So I think that is obviously question, but they obviously think this is worth it because they feel the need to have something where they're saying, look, you know, where fiscal discipline does exist in some way, shape or form. And I mean I suspect the corporation tax has been a vulnerability of that, and also the sense that once you get below 20%, you don't, you know, you get limited benefit from cutting it more because, you know, the number of places we're lower than that are not very many. But I also do think there's an interesting thing, which is as you come out of the EU, you could see a kind of obvious argument for, but you know, your corporation tax rate needs to be particularly competitive to maintain your attractiveness to businesses that might have initially based themselves here as a kind of gateway to the EU market.
Fraser, finally on this, one of the big criticisms of Theresa May's 2017 campaign, and there were several, we don't have time for all of them on this podcast today, was the fact that she appeared to be in this middle ground on the economy. You didn't hear the economy mentioned much during that campaign, but also you spoke to Conservative MPs, they thought she was closer to Ed Miliband, really, in terms of her approach on economics. Now, Boris Johnson, I don't think we would say is close to Ed Miliband, but it does seem as though if we're going to talk about the similarities between the 2017 campaign and the 2019 campaign in terms of where they are aiming in terms of the seats, this is starting to get a bit closer to Theresa May, no?
It certainly is. And so far, I mean, up until this morning, I would have said that Theresa May and Boris Johnson have got very different positions on business, that Theresa May's manifesto kind of snarled at them, sort of adopted the Ed Miliband idea of them being predators who need to be kept in line by a government that, who's wise to their tricks. Whereas Boris Johnson's language is still, we can have a thriving, dynamic market economy generating lots of tax revenue, and that is used to help public services. So there is no tension. There is the Conservative government will encourage the market economy precisely because it wants to help. Now that was, it's always been actually his message when, you know, when we interviewed him just a few weeks ago. This is what he had to say in the magazine interview. And now that seems to be changing. Now he's saying, no, actually, if you want to help public services, then you need to abandon these tax cuts. George Osborne, not the greatest tax cutter in the world, said that this was a really important symbol. He wanted Britain to have the lowest corporation tax cuts of the G20. He wanted it to be 18%. So to abandon this Osbornean trajectory because he doesn't agree with the principle that this will lead to more tax revenue does take you closer to Theresa May's position fiscally. Now, there's also tension between what the Prime Minister says and what he does. Right now, he's in favour of extra spending, he's in favour of keeping borrowing under control, and he's in favour of lower taxes. People often point out to him that you can have two of those three. So I think this corporation tax thing is at odds with what he says about the dynamic market economy. But I also think that he won't follow Theresa May down the line of basically betraying businesses and rich people as being the class enemy. He'll keep that verbally, but I wonder how many policies will be left by the time he's finished this campaign.
James, today on the subject of business, we have the leaders from the various parties appearing before the CBI, where they'll be asked various questions. Now, the CBI has previously been rather critical of Boris Johnson, perhaps to put it mildly, and his Brexit approach. Now, Boris Johnson does have a Brexit deal ready to go, and they also have a choice of ultimately, really, if we think realistically, either Boris Johnson in number 10 or Jeremy Corbyn in number 10. Which do you think they're leaning towards?
I think business as a whole is broadly leaning towards the Tories rather than Corbyn. I think people have begun to wake up to the realisation that, you know, you can't go back to the status quo ante. It is not possible to kind of return to the time when you had New Labour and EU membership and, you know, two essentially pro-market political parties competing in Labour and the Tories. You know, that option is no longer on the table. I was very struck the other day. I was talking to someone who's a very good bellwether of city opinion, and they were saying what strikes them is lots of people they know in the city who a few months ago were kind of leaning towards the Lib Dems, ever since Boris Johnson got his Brexit deal, have kind of moved quite rapidly back into the Tory column, started giving money to the party again, because there's a kind of realisation that, oh, OK, right, it's not going to be no deal now. We can live with this Brexit, in inverted commas, and therefore, seeing off Jeremy Corbyn, it's become more important. And I think there's also been a realisation that I think there's beginning to be more realisation that the second referendum wouldn't be quite as straightforward an exercise as I think a lot of people in the business community got themselves in a position where they just thought it was inevitable that in a second referendum Remain would win. I think more and more people are realising that it is by no means the sure thing that their own social circle might suggest that it is.
Now, Fraser, just looking, I suppose, more broadly and further ahead to the week, the Tories are currently quite comfortably leading in the polls when we look at steady, repeated leads. But if we think back to 2017, a subject of this podcast a few times, ultimately this was the week where it started to change for Labour. Now, we have two big moments for Labour this week. If you put CBI to one side, we have the leaders' debates on Tuesday, and we have the Labour manifesto launch confirmed for Thursday. Do you think this could be a seismic week for getting momentum behind Jeremy Corbyn?
Well, remember that last time nothing seismic happened. What we had was a steady increase in the Labour vote, which people didn't really notice really until it was too late and the Tories had lost their majority. If you look at the favourite opinion poll I look at right now is comparing the trajectory of the Tory and the Labour positions on the sort of 1 week polling average with where they were at this time in the 2017 campaign. And so far, they're going exactly according to the 2017 script, with the difference being that the Tories don't have nearly as much support as they had last time. Labour's on pretty much the same. Now, I wonder whether this will be the week where it might break if the Tories continue to rise, but Labour then either flattens out and starts to go down, therefore not continuing the trajectory of 2017. This is the big question. I don't think if it happens, it will be seismic. I don't think anything is going to be. I mean, there's sort of plenty headline explosions in the campaign, but what happened in 2017 was these headline explosions didn't really impact the public support. I think we'll be in a better place to know this time next week if a Labour vote is continuing a steady rise or if it is declining. I also think that we're seeing perhaps a shift in the theme of this election. A few weeks ago, we would have thought this election was all about Brexit. Now, increasingly, I think it's becoming about whether you want Corbyn as a Prime Minister for 5 years. And I think this is where the CBI is having such a conundrum today. I mean, Caroline Fairbairn, the Director General of the CBI, has for some time been so anti-Brexit that they've described Boris Johnson and the Tories as basically being a threat to the economy. And now they're beginning to clock that having a Corbyn government with a nationalisation agenda and the expropriation of shareholdings without compensation isn't a brilliant alternative. The language which she's used today, Caroline Fairbairn, is being saying, we are facing a danger that could get in the way of a bright future. It takes the form of extreme ideology and we see it on both sides of the political divide. On the right, we have a threat of even a preference for no deal at the end point of our Brexit negotiations. And on the left, you've got Corbynism. So the CBI is almost making out as if it's an equal threat to British prosperity. A no-deal Brexit, which it's, by the way, since it seems we've got a deal, I'm not quite sure why they're hyping that up so much. But they're placing it as being an equal threat to Corbynism. I am not so sure if I was a CBI member that I would place those threats as being of equal severity. I think having a Marxist Chancellor of the Exchequer is perhaps a greater deterrent to business investment in Britain than leaving the European Union. But the Brexit debate has pushed a lot of people into pretty hardline positions. And I wonder if they're going to be able to unwind those positions in the few weeks left we've got of this campaign.
I think we have a tendency in our profession, not to put us all on the kind of metaphorical couch, to overly analyse things through the prism of the last campaign. I remember in 2015, because 2010 had produced a hung parliament, you know, every night an academic called Chris Hanretti produced a seat forecast. And we would every night we could earn these conversations about what each night's movements meant about the hung parliament that was to come. Obviously, the Tories ended up winning a majority, and so all that turned irrelevant. I wonder whether this time round we're overly interpreting from the events of 2017 and therefore kind of failing to see what the poll, what the evidence in front of us is suggesting. And I think one of the big differences from 2017, which leads you on to your question about the leaders' debate and its importance, is in 2017, people's views of Theresa May especially and Jeremy Corbyn were quite shallowly held. So people thought that they really liked Theresa May, that she seemed a contrast to Cameron. She wasn't a flashy, showy politician. They thought she just got on with the job. She didn't treat politics like a game. And then they suddenly saw more and more of her during the campaign and they became less and less keen on her. I think Boris Johnson, for good or ill, people have quite strong, defined views on him already. And that is why I think that generally things like Jennifer Arcuri and stuff like that don't change that many minds because people have their view of Boris Johnson already. And I think with Jeremy Corbyn, I think views on Jeremy Corbyn have become much more baked in over the last couple of years than they were before. Before, people had this fairly negative view of him going into the campaign, but they hadn't really seen him that much. Then they saw him and they changed their minds. Then over the last 2 years, they've seen more and more of him and their minds have changed again negatively. And I don't get the impression that the souffle is going to rise a second time. So,
by the way, James, at our event last week, I was approached by a member of the audience who heard you saying that in the podcast and wants you to know that there is a souffle that can rise twice.
Ah, what is the souffle that can rise twice?
She said she'd email me the recipe. She hasn't yet, but okay. She is really keen that you know this.
Okay, all right, fine. So,
yeah, if you do know a recipe for a souffle which can rise twice, do you get in touch on our podcast email?
Which is podcast@spectator.co.uk.
So that, I think, is one of the big differences. And I think one of the things that but the wild card this time around, I think, is the Remain card. I think if the polls are, where they were this weekend, towards the end of this week, I think next weekend is going to be defined by a big push by people saying, look, you are, you know, Boris Johnson is on course to get a majority. The guy who led the Leave campaign is going to be able to push his deal through Parliament and then have 5 years to sort out the next phase of UK-EU relations. And I think there'll be big pressure on Labour and Lib Dems to indulge in far more tactical voting than they have done to date. There'll be, you know, at the moment, candidates' names are on the ballot paper and they can't get them off. But there'll be more pressure on people to say, you know, if you are a Labour candidate in a Lib Dem seat and you can't win, you must tell your voters to back the Lib Dems and vice versa. I think that's going to become one of the themes of the campaign next weekend because, you know, in a way, when you look at this, you know, I think the smallest Tory lead in the polls right now is 8 points. The largest is 17 points. I mean, when you look at that evidence, on all of those numbers, from 8 to 17, the Tories will get a majority. And I think that people will begin to start saying, hang on a second, we need to do something. There's a very interesting thing. Patrick English, one of the academics who works on John Kirsty's exit poll, came out with some probabilities this week. Now, I know we've all got wary of forecasts. He has a 95%, I think I'm right in saying, 95% probability of a Conservative majority.
And just on that, I would add one note of caution because you saw the Tory lead go up by 3 points in some polls this weekend. Now, Professor John Curtis, when he was speaking to Hacks last week, said, I expect the Tory poll lead to go up 3%, but no one should get too carried away by this because this will simply be the fact that the way you do polling is because the Brexit Party has stood down in certain seats, it means the Tories will rise and it's not actually representative. It probably just means the Tories are consolidating a lead in places they have already.
I would feel generally a lot more reassured by all this if I could think of a recent example where these prediction models have proved even halfway accurate. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, what James says is logically true. And this might be the election that breaks the mold. This might be the election where the polls got it right. But that hasn't happened in any major election I can think of for at least 5 years. I think that's because we're in a state of political flux right now. The people voting are not always the ones who are being asked questions by pollsters. And I'm not quite sure it's settled yet. Maybe it is settling now. Maybe the pollsters have caught up with it. But that is why I have been reminded of that old saying, why is it he who knows he knows not?
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James. And thank you, Cindy, you for producing this podcast today and every other day.